Welcome to Heart Yoga Radio. It's the 30th of October 2020. This is another in our series, Interesting Times, which concerns itself with current affairs. What I want to talk about today is the release yesterday of the EHRC report on anti-Semitism in the Labour Party. I also want to talk about the reactions to the report, particularly Keir Starmer's press conference immediately following the release of the report, Jeremy Corbyn's comments on the release of the report, and the subsequent suspension of the membership of the Labour Party of Jeremy Corbyn, and therefore the withdrawal of the whip in the House of Commons, and Corbyn's reaction to that, and some of the reactions in the press and in the alternative media, for instance, Navarra Media and the Michael Brooks Show, giving a perspective from across the Atlantic, and one or two others as well. Now, I have read the report fairly closely. I started reading it yesterday, shortly after it came out, and got up earlier this morning and finished the last little bit. I've taken fairly extensive notes. It's 130 pages long. It's fairly well organised and clearly written. As a piece of legal judgment, it's probably, as far as I can tell, you know, pretty competent, pretty solid. And I kind of don't have all that much quarrel with it on that level. At a deeper level, if you get philosophical about it, it does have problems, particularly around the role the actual truth plays in some of the judgments. It seems that truth is irrelevant, or falsehood for that matter, when it comes to certain actions being deemed anti-Semitic. In other words, you can utter a proposition, and even if that proposition is truth, you can still be found to be an anti-Semite, as far as I can tell from the report. There is not much consideration of the nature of the kind of truth that needs to be invoked in an inquiry like this. In fact, there is only one mention that can be construed in any way as engaging with this issue, and that's right at the end. There is the in the legal terminology, it tells us that the standard of evidence is that of civil proof, which is somewhat less rigorous than the level of proof required in, say, a criminal trial. I don't agree, therefore, with Aaron Bastani of Navarra Media that this is an excellent report, very well done, and they should be congratulated for crafting it. I think there are some unsupportable presuppositions, or very difficult to support presuppositions, underpinning the thing. I think there are some examples of overreach and overblown conclusion, which relies really only on impressions. And that there are problems on this kind of epistemological level. Of course, not everybody's going to ask questions of the intricate nature which I'm trying to ask here. But for me, it doesn't satisfy me in many ways. And it has a bit of a smell about it. Having said that, as a legal document, let it stand, I would say, and that Jeremy Corbyn joins in with Keir Starmer and says, well, the Labour Party should implement the recommendations of this report and the obligations, the legal obligations that this report demands of the Labour Party over and above certain recommendations. And it seems to me that this is worth doing, simply because it will give the Labour Party a very solid and unimpeachable system for dealing with complaints if they actually go through with what EHRC recommends. In other words, EHRC might, in some way, have rescued the Labour Party from its own kind of fairly chaotic procedures. And internal conflict, which has made it difficult for it to really get a satisfactory method of investigating and taking action on complaints of anti-Semitism, amongst other racisms. Now, I'm jumping the gun here a bit, and I will return to this and give a few examples of where I find the actual report itself unsatisfactory. But let's first of all say what the report found. The findings are delineated in the first annex to the report, Annex 1, which is on page 102. And this is the Unlawful Act Notice. This is the formal notice given by the Equality and Human Rights Commission, the EHRC, which is a legal document. It has some status legally, and it can compel compliance to certain requirements under threat of penalty. I'm going to go through the three findings that the Commission came up with and explain each one as I go. The notice was issued under Section 21 of the Equalities Act of 2006, and its subtitle is "In the Matter of the Investigation into the Labour Party as Described in the Terms of Reference Dated the 28th of May 2019. So the original complaint was brought in the on the 28th of May 2019. It seems that the main complainant was a body known as the Campaign Against Anti-Semitism, and I have actually looked into this body and who's behind it and who's financing it, and they seem to be a bunch of fairly right-wing activists. But that's neither here nor there. They're the main complainant, and the formal thing goes like this: the Commission for Equality and Human Rights, commonly referred to as the Equality and Human Rights Commission, EHRC, hereby gives the following notice to the General Secretary of the Labour Party, Mr David Evans, pursuant to Section 21 of the Equality Act 2006, EA 2006, that the Labour Party has been the subject of an investigation under Sections 21A of the EA 2006. Following that investigation, the EHRC is satisfied that the Labour Party has committed the following unlawful acts, brackets, unlawful acts, capital U, capital A, colon. The first one is that the Labour Party committed unlawful harassment of its members contrary to Section 104(4)(a) of the Equalities Act 2010 related to race, brackets, Jewish ethnicity, through the acts of its agents, Ken Livingstone and Pat Bromley, as further set out in Chapter 3 of and Annex 2 to the EHRC's report of the investigation titled Investigation into Anti-Semitism of the Labour Party Report. All right, let's put this in even plainer English, even though I think that's difficult to understand. They find that there were unlawful acts, two unlawful acts of harassment based on Jewish ethnicity, in other words, related to race, brackets, Jewish ethnicity. And these were the cases of Ken Livingstone and Pat Bromley, which received a fair bit of publicity. And because Ken Livingstone at the time was a member of the NEC, the National Executive Committee of the Labour Party, which is its perhaps its governing body, you might say, its administrative governing body. And Pat Bromley, who was a Labour councillor in a local council at the time. Because these two actors were, at the time, holders of office of one sort or another in the Labour Party, they are deemed to be, by the law, agents of the Labour Party. And if they're acting in the capacity as agents of the Labour Party, and if that can be demonstrated, and they commit an unlawful act of harassment, in other words, certain speech acts in this case, then the Labour Party is deemed to be culpable. So the Labour Party is taking the rap for something that Ken Livingstone did and Pat Bromley did. This is the law. Whether it's sensible or not, I don't know. Ordinary Labour Party members can sound off and say all kinds of foul things. And the Labour Party is not deemed to be responsible for their actions, even though they're expected to discipline such people if what they've uttered is unlawful. And it's only in virtue of holding office that Ken Livingstone and Pat Bromley are deemed the agents of the party. Now, in both of these cases, to my mind, the case is rather thin against them. Both Ken Livingstone and Pat Bromley made some crass utterances regarding the anti-Semitism itself and its nature. But I think it's a bit of a stretch, even though you can stretch it, to say that these are clear acts of anti-Semitism. Now, whether this will receive any kind of a challenge at any point, I don't know. And I dare say it's six of one, half a dozen of the other. But I don't believe that Ken Livingstone is particularly an anti-Semite. Of course, this brings up the notion that perhaps he might not be a self-styled anti-Semite, but he might be an unconscious anti-Semite. And we hear this kind of talk. And I actually think once you start accusing people of unconscious this and unconscious that, that you've got a carte blanche to accuse anybody of anything without evidence. You just say, oh, well, you did it unconsciously. And it's a bit of a tall order, really, to be honest with you. So my own view is that the case against both Ken Livingstone and Pat Bromley, are somewhat thin. Nevertheless, the EHRC, and they're lawyers, so maybe they know better than I do, and they believe it's fairly unequivocal that Ken Livingstone and Pat Bromley made utterances that are anti-Semitic. It's interesting that in the discussion, everywhere in the document, and this is discussed a few times in the document, particularly in Chapter 3 and particularly in Annex 2, nowhere is the truth or falsehood of the propositions uttered by Ken Livingstone and Pat Bromley brought to question. Now, is there any discussion of how the conclusion that Livingstone and Bromley uttered falsehoods with regard to anti-Semitism? I mean, both Bromley and Ken Livingstone think, or thought at the time, or appeared to think at the time, that there was some weaponisation of anti-Semitism somewhere in the game. So that is another question. It takes us a very, very long way afield. And I might be right in my suspicion that these are not terribly good cases. The EHRC are lawyers. Maybe they've done a better job. Yeah, I'm prepared to say that it is up for discussion. But what alarms me is that truth is nowhere in play in the discussion about this. Nowhere. It seems that you can say something true, that there were smears, there were unwarranted and malicious smears against the Labour Party. That might actually be a matter of fact. But if you say that, you're an anti-Semite, regardless of the truth or falsehood of the utterance. And that seems to be a thread that runs through this document, and it just amazes me that lawyers, who we would expect to have some kind of regard for adequationist truth, even if they're not epistemologically very sophisticated otherwise, can issue this report without any consideration of that matter. So that worries me about this report. But anyway, whatever the upshot here, we should say that Ken Livingstone resigned as a result of this action against him. Of course, then nothing goes any further. all he had to do is resign. Presumably, though, as a very long-time member of the Labour Party, who'd held some fairly high office, Mayor of London, indeed, which is a huge political office given the size of London and its centrality to the UK economy and culture and life. But nevertheless, Ken Livingstone, I dare say with a fair bit of regret, did resign. Pat Bromley was eventually expelled from the party. So nobody can say that the party did nothing, because there was action taken in both cases. Now, whether Ken Livingstone was leaned on, he could have perhaps gone through a process of appeal, perhaps taking the Labour Party to court, etc., etc. And it could have gone forever, but he thought better of it and he resigned. Who knows the exact ins and outs of what he was thinking? Pat Bromley, of course, expelled. So, okay, you know, they were found to have committed, the Labour Party was found to have committed unlawful harassment of its members. But it's not as though the agents deemed to have caused this harassment got off scot-free. They didn't, neither are now in the Labour Party. Maybe it was slow doing this, maybe the processes were not as clear as they should have been, and I think this is the case. I think the processes of investigating anti-Semitism cases seems to have been pretty muddled from what I can pick up reading through this document and other sources. So what does it mean to commit unlawful harassment? To quote from the document, page 22, the meaning of harassment. In this context, harassment means unwanted conduct related to race, which has the purpose or effect of violating a person's dignity or creates an intimidating, hostile, degrading, humiliating or offensive environment. There is an example given. An elected representative of a political party is verbally offensive about Jewish people during a constituency meeting. This behaviour creates an offensive environment for members. This is likely to be harassment on the grounds of race. Let's have a look then at one of the two cases of harassment. Let's look at the case of Ken Livingstone. In the document, there's an Annex 2, which is the Unlawful Act Case Summaries. There is a content warning. It says this chapter contains offensive language. Anyway, in the state of in the case of Ken Livingstone, it appears that Mr. Livingstone, in April 2016, made a statement about anti-Semitic social media posts by Naz Shah MP, which we explain below. So Naz Shah apparently said, I came out with some fairly crass thing about Israel should be relocated to the United States, with the comment, problem solved, and there was a post in which she appeared to liken Israeli policies to those of Hitler. Naz Shah apologised for her comments in Parliament on the 27th of April 2016. Ken Livingstone denied that these posts were anti-Semitic, and he sought to minimise their offensive nature by stating that they were merely criticism of Israeli policy at a time of conflict with the Palestinians. He also alleged that scrutiny of Naz Shah's conduct was part of an apparent smear campaign by the Israel lobby to stigmatise critics of Israel as anti-Semitic, as well as being aimed at undermining and disrupting the leadership of Jeremy Corbyn MP. These comments were made on radio shows with large audiences. More than 20 Labour MPs called for Ken Livingstone to be suspended for his comments. Now, this strikes me as possibly being true, and there is evidence that Israel, the state of Israel, throws money and as personnel doing PR on its behalf, given that it gets a rather a bad press for its treatment of the Palestinians, which is absolutely appalling by any standards and replete with human rights violations. I suggest that you look up the Israel lobby on Wikipedia and particularly take a look at the entry under the Board of Deputies, which is a body which has managed to extract from the Labour Party certain pledges of allegiance. And Which is a generally not, you wouldn't say exactly a group that's sympathetic to socialism. It is sympathetic to the state of Israel, and it does have connections with the embassy, and it does have connections in the British government. So I suggest you follow that through and make of it what you will. But nowhere here in the EHRC document is the question raised as to the veracity or otherwise of Ken Livingstone's accusations. There is at least a possibility that these accusations may be true. They may be false, they may be true. But if they're false, okay, you know, and if they're willfully false, he should have a rap over the knuckles. But what happens if they're true? Where is the investigation? And it seems to me that there is evidence of the state of Israel operating a PR across the world to sanitise its reputation. Now, the report itself, this report itself, makes it clear that criticism of the state of Israel is not itself anti-Semitic. That's underscored in the document. It's thought to be anti-Semitic if the behaviour of the state of Israel is thought to be somehow the result of some quality that all Jews exhibit, some inherent essence of being Jewish that gives rise to the behaviour of the Israeli state. And that clearly would be, well, insupportable and a slander on the many righteous Jewish people that hate the behaviour of the Israeli state as it is at present. And in fact, there are many Jews who oppose Zionism, in other words, the notion that Israel has a sort of a God-given right to the lands formerly known as Palestine. And these are just simply facts. They might be unpalatable to some people. And of course, we need to remember that people can be offended by the truth. And again, the report makes it clear that there is a right of free speech as guaranteed in the Human Rights Act. And it makes the point that the Human Rights Act has to be reconciled with the Equalities Act. And that a balance has to be struck between free speech and the demands for equal treatment and non-discriminative treatment of peoples on the basis of their ethnicity or religious affiliations. And of course, you know, there are injustices performed on the basis, against people on the basis of their ethnicity or religious affiliation or sexual orientation and so on. This is a bigger mission just to simply presume in this section on page 105 that Ken Livingstone was lying or mistaken. I take it that Naz Shah's utterance is a bit crass and a bit over the top. And Naz Shah apologised. Moving on the 15th of February in 2017, the Jewish Labour Movement wrote a letter claiming that Ken Livingstone's comments had caused immeasurable damage and that had the effect of his remarks on the relationship between the Labour Party and the Jewish community had been devastating. Well, okay, maybe. But then again, people can be upset by hearing the truth. So there's a huge question here. Was what Ken Livingstone was asserting true or false? Not dealt with in this report. And Labour Party members did resign because of Ken Livingstone's comment. And the National Constitutional Committee didn't expel him on April the 17th. And this was why certain Labour Party members resigned. Where Labour Party members told the EHRC that Ken Livingstone's comments caused shock and anger. And therefore, I suppose the EHRC is therefore construing Ken Livingstone's comments as being on behalf of the Labour Party since Ken Livingstone was on the NEC, and that being distressing and offensive and making people uncomfortable and feel uncomfortable and wanted in the Labour Party, that therefore Ken Livingstone should be expelled. So it's now actually impossible to investigate any apparent smear campaign by the Israel lobby, since this is now deemed a classic anti-Semitic trope. Well, again, this depends on whether it's true or false. And it strikes me that Ken Livingstone didn't say anything about Jewish people per se, qua Jewish people, but was directing his remarks to the Israeli state. And one is permitted to do that, according to this very report. So I just want to know whether the EHRC writers, composers, whatever you want to call them, concoctors, have any evidence as to the truth or falsehood of Ken Livingstone's assertion. Now, the Labour Party members, presumably Jewish members who were offended, and the Jewish Labour movement was one of the complainants that gave rise to this report. So I'm presuming it's Labour Party members belonging to that tendency, said that the effect of these comments was humiliating, denied the victim's experience, diminished the issue, had the effect of stirring up and fueling hatred for Jews, and contributed to the creation of a hostile and intimidating environment for Jewish Labour Party members. But at the same time, we have to recognise that there are Jewish members of the Labour Party, Jewish Voices for Labour, for instance, who defended Corbyn and defended the Labour Party and weren't offended by this assertion of Ken Livingstone, which, as I say, may be true or may be false. And a lot should ride on whether it's true or false. Nowhere considered here. So this is pretty problematic. Anyway, Ken Livingstone, for whatever reason, his sentence was that he was found to have behaved in an untoward manner or against the rule book, the Labour Party rule book, was given a 2-year suspension, which included the time he had been administratively suspended from April 2016 pending the investigation. There was a 7-month delay between the NEC referral to the NCC, the National Constitutional Committee, and the laying of charges by the latter body. But Ken Livingstone resigned in May 2018. So, the findings are that Ken Livingstone harassed Jewish members of the Labour Party, and that the Labour Party was culpable given Ken Livingstone's status within the Labour Party as an NEC member. This, to me, is questionable. Simply because of the post-truth nature of what's happened here. What is the truth or falsehood of Livingstone's assertions? And I've seen plenty of investigations that show that the Israeli state does have PR operations, propaganda operations throughout the world. And this is kind of well known and well documented. Ken Livingstone then was found to have made utterances deemed to be anti-Semitic by the EHRC, which had caused distress to Jewish people, and Jewish people particularly in the Labour Party. Notice it says harassment of its members. Two cases then of harassment, as defined by the EHRC, were found proven. I won't deal with the second one now. We've got enough of an example with the Ken Livingstone case. Now, there's something I want to say here. It follows that if The case against Ken Livingstone was cogent. The EHRC believes that Ken Livingstone's assertions about the possibility, at least, of smears and vexatious complaints and vexatious utterances against the Labour Party are clearly untrue. But I'll repeat it again, nowhere is this demonstrated in the document. Nowhere is the need to demonstrate it anywhere found in the document. And I think 70 cases were investigated and two were found to be upheld. So just so you understand it, these are cases of harassment in which the Labour Party is deemed culpable for the actions of two of its officers. I don't know quite how they're supposed to prevent this kind of thing in advance, but I suppose if you get suspicions that somebody's a bit off the rails, you know, you would perhaps want your party to be disciplined, and you would discipline them once you got the suspicion. But I mean, where does that lead? I don't know. Okay, now there is no doubt that Jewish people were offended by these remarks. And we should take that seriously. We really should take offence seriously. At the same time, and the report makes this clear, there has to be a balance struck between freedom of expression on the one hand and utterances which are designed or which inadvertently cause distress to certain sections of the party. Now, whether the EHRC has struck that balance in the cases of Livingstone and Bromley, who knows? My own view is that these cases, the cases against them are fairly thin, but I do think in both cases they were fairly crass and undiplomatic and tactless in the way these utterances were given out. And I think Ken Livingstone is a bit more defensible than Pat Bromley. I say that this is my opinion. But it is a real conundrum. To what extent do we have freedom of expression, and to what extent do we attempt to police a speech? And I don't think this is as straightforward as free speech advocates from the sort of libertarian, in quotes, wing of USA politics, for instance, think. It's a difficult question, and if you go back over our podcast, you'll find that I've considered it in some detail in a podcast about the nature of free speech. So there is a problem there, recognised by this report. Okay, we've got two members. You're mentioning a mass party of half a million people. Two members bring the party into disrepute. And given that the law works the way that it does, the party is found to have committed unlawful harassment of its members, particularly its Jewish members. So the second finding of the EHRC investigation is this. The Labour Party's practice or policy of political interference, as defined in Chapter 5 of the report, in anti-Semitism complaints, amounts to unlawful indirect discrimination against its Jewish members, contrary to Section 102(2)(a) and or D of the Equality Act 2010. As explained in the report, the Labour Party operated two separate relevant unlawful practices of policy. First, the overall practice or policy operating from March 2016 to May 2019, in which the leader of the opposition's office or the leadership was involved in politically self-sensitive complaints. And secondly, the specific and formal practice or policy of referring all anti-Semitism complaints to the leader of the opposition's office in March to April 2018. So it's two types of political interference. I think this is found from what I can make out, though I don't think that there was an overall nefarious intent or any desire to cover up which went on in this political interference. It shouldn't have gone on. It's the EHRC is correct to say that a complaints procedure should be self-contained, transparent, independent. Even though the report admits that the leader of the opposition's office or team has a legitimate interest in seeing that everything's going properly. And given that the attempt to streamline the investigation process was compromised to some extent by internal divisions in the party and by shenanigans from the right-wing apparatchiks, from what I can see, in my honest opinion, having looked at the leaked report about the goings-on inside the party, I think things were very, very difficult. Things were very chaotic. And I think Corbyn did try his best, but he didn't master this situation. And it's probably a good thing that this is now going to be sorted out, because the party will have to get it sorted out. He's legally obliged now to sort it out or face further action. Even though further action, if you want to know how serious this is in law, entails county court, not the High Court, not the Old Bailey, not the Supreme Court. County court, very low level of offence in the scheme of things. Again, not trying to excuse it. I think it was a mess. It seems to me that there was a legitimate point in the leader of the opposition's office trying to make sure that the processes were working. And there's a partial recognition of this by the report, even though I think that that attempt was a failure and it compromised the independence of the process. We should say that in the case of Ken Livingstone, that it seems that the intervention by the leader of the opposition's office resulted in the quicker resignation of Livingstone from the party rather than dragging it out or giving Livingstone any preferential treatment. Now, in this light, I do have to say that the report, again, to its credit, is alert to the plight of people who are accused and their right to be treated properly, evenly and justly, just as much as they are alert to the right of complainants for, again, justice and fair treatment. The AHR says that this amounts to unlawful indirect discrimination against its Jewish members by the party. And this is because treatment of complainants given political intervention of a rather sort of random and inconsistent nature results in random and inconsistent treatment of complaints and complainants, and the complainant's chances of getting any justice is thereby compromised. I think this is probably correct. And it's indirect because it's not as though the leadership were pouncing on the complainants and dragging them down the cellar and giving them electric shocks or anything like that. But it's indirect given that the procedure wasn't very, very rigorous, just simply as a result of, I would say, the well-meaning attempt of the leader's office to cut through the chaos, which was internal Labour Party politics at the time. Now, the EHRC bring up an interesting point. I think it's valid to a point, but there is a difficulty with it. And that point is that the Labour Party has got a very robust and pretty rigorous mechanism and system for dealing with sexual harassment. And it's pretty tight. And in comparison, the way the various systems that were in place for dealing with anti-Semitism are pretty messy and inconsistent. So somebody complaining of sexual harassment can expect just and even-handed treatment and a consistent treatment with some kind of firm and well-understood parameters administered by trained staff. Whereas a Jewish person or even a non-Jewish person complaining about anti-Semitism can't expect that same standard of treatment when they're making complaints. In other words, they are discriminated against, and this would be on the basis of their Jewish ethnicity. So I think the Labour Party should take this seriously and get a really nice, robust system in place. They did attempt to. It was very difficult, I would say, given the chaos and maybe a certain incompetency. And I think that should be accepted. And both Jeremy Corbyn and Keir Starmer have committed to getting this sorted out within the next 6 months. So I would say that a plan of action has to be drawn up by the 10th of December, according to the EIHRC. This is its requirement. And within 6 months has to be enacted. So in 6 months' time, unless the Labour Party is really, really foolish, it's going to have a really state-of-the-art complaint system for complaints about anti-Semitism. And this I see as a bit of a silver lining in all this mess, in as much as it will put the anti-Semitism matter to bed. And other parties won't be able to claim that they've got an EHRC rubber-stamped complaints system for complaints about anti-Semitism in the party. And this will probably be a good thing. And I think if Labour's got any sense, or if commentators and activists have got any sense, they will throw this at the other parties, particularly at the Conservative Party. Interestingly, the EHRC has so far declined to investigate the Conservative Party for institutional Islamophobia, given repeated complaints from the Muslim Council of Great Britain. I think one wonders why, and I've certainly asked them directly, why aren't you investigating this matter? Some people call this style of operation whataboutery or whataboutism. And I think whataboutery gets a bit of a bad press. I think it's actually a legitimate argument that gets misunderstood because its conclusion is seldom stated. And if we start to state the conclusion instead of hoping that people will understand the conclusion immediately because they got some facility in basic logic, I think whataboutery will be seen to be something quite useful. Because basically what whataboutery does, it says, what about the Conservative Party? You know, the fact that they haven't been investigated should give us a whiff of suspicion about the actual agenda of the EHRC. Why haven't they? Why haven't they investigated the Conservative Party? Isn't there something fishy going on? The conclusion is we may be suspicious that something fishy is going on. I mean, what about it is also quite useful for drawing the conclusion that person X is throwing stones but lives in a glass house. In other words, they're a hypocrite. We should give the conclusion person X is a hypocrite. And this is a perfect valid point to make about somebody in public life. Anyway, I digress. So back to the three findings. The third finding is that the Labour Party practice or policy prior to August 2020 of failing to provide adequate training to those handling complaints of anti-Semitism amounts to unlawful indirect discrimination against its Jewish members. And this is fair enough, I think, that you want trained people to be conducting investigations as sensitive as those into accusations of anti-Semitism by party members or party functionaries. It's not too much to ask. In fact, it should be, in any reasonable complaint system, a definite requirement. Labour did try and put some things in place. It's commissioned... it made an arrangement with a university that runs a course on anti-Semitism studies, you might say. But the EHRC found this too academic and not practical enough, even though it did say that an academic understanding of anti-Semitism was required. And I think this is fair enough. Labour did try and put this right, also employing sort of permanent lawyers to assist panel members investigating these matters. Now, it should be noted that the report does mention improvements, and when Jenny Formby took over as General Secretary of the Labour Party, things did improve. And Jeremy Corbyn certainly did make many initiatives, which are documented, to try and push the process of improving the processes forward. It's not as though the Labour Party just ignored all this, but it was ramshackle. We have to admit, the attempt to put in a really good system was a bit ramshackle. So there is a slight contradiction here, because earlier on in the document, though, the EHRC does say that they don't find that an unlawful act has been committed because the Labour Party couldn't be expected to make arrangements to commission training for officials of investigatory panels prior to seeing the report. And the EHRC seemed to accept that, whereas here in the actual findings, they are saying that there was an unlawful failure to provide adequate training. So I suppose the finding of no unlawful omission might simply apply to the time period from when the this report was being put together, being investigated and put together. So we've got the requirements, which come pretty well after that. So this is what they are. The Labour Party is required to prepare an action plan for the purposes of avoiding repetition of or continuation of the unlawful acts. The EHRC makes recommendations for that purpose, which are set out in an executive summary of the report under the section titled Our Recommendations for Change. The first draft of the action plan must be given to the EHRC by 5 p.m. 30 the 10th of December. So I've got a few weeks to get that together. There is a possibility of appeal, and the court might make orders of costs and expenses, and it is there. As I say, Keir Starmer and Jeremy Corbyn have both said unequivocally that they will try and implement the recommendations. I mean, there's a lot of material in this report. I could go through it line by line, which actually I did very carefully. I've got pages and notes. I don't know how helpful that would be. There is a kind of fairly detailed summary of the complaints against Ken Livingstone and the complaints against Pam Bromley. I suggest that you have a look at these if you are interested. I think there's an awful lot of presuppositions and epistemological ignorance involved in both of these cases, even though I would say personally I wish that both Pam Bromley and Ken Livingstone had been perhaps a little bit more kind of circumspect and careful. Now, there's a lot of stuff about the hurt and pain of Jewish people, and I think we have to take that very, very seriously. But at the same time, I would mention that certain prominent Jewish people are not fazed by the notion that there's been dirty tricks, that there has been some kind of weaponization of anti-Semitism. Amongst them, Andrew Feinstein, who's challenging the Labour Party now to expel him. Andrew Feinstein is a Jew. He lost 39 of his relatives in the Nazi extermination camps. He won't be out-Jewed by other Jews or told he's the wrong kind of Jew. And yet he's adamant that there is some dirty tricks have gone on, some weaponisation has gone on. Similarly, David Graeber, the late David Graeber, a great intellectual, to my mind, who sadly passed away recently at the age of 59, I think. But Graeber went public and said, you know, the most offensive thing that he's called a self-hating Jew. and appeals to the Jewish communities. Notice I don't say the Jewish community, I say the Jewish communities, because Jews in the UK, all 250,000 of them, are a very diverse group with diverse political opinions, diverse religious affiliations and so on. But he calls upon the Jewish communities to stop those who are culpable, to stop weaponising anti-Semitism, because it doesn't enable the Jewish community to protect itself against those who want us dead, to quote Graeber, those who want us dead, the far right. Far right are prepared to blow up synagogues and have murderous impulses towards Jews. The Labour Party, for all its crassness, does not. These are the people that will be on the barricades with you if the far right gets any kind of traction and starts to institute its hateful programmes. And David Graeber makes a very forceful case along those lines, which you can find on the internet. And there's no mention of these kind of takes in this report, and there should be. And I think we have to take people of the calibre of Graeber and Feinstein, and from the other side of the water, Noam Chomsky, the great Noam Chomsky, and Professor Finkelstein, also a great pundit, Jewish intellectuals. You can't just pretend that's not being said. You can't pretend that the Jewish voice for Labour, rather than the Jewish Labour movement, you know, this is a distinct group, is prepared to speak up for Corbyn and for Corbyn's Labour and for the Labour Party. This is not to say there is no anti-Semitism in the Labour Party. It would be foolish to deny that. And it does need dealing with in very, very robust fashion. And as I said, if these requirements of the AHRC are put into place, the Labour Party will pretty well have a nice rubber stamp on its efforts, as long as it keeps auditing its procedures and publishing its findings and being very transparent in its processes and so forth. Anyway, there's a lot of other stuff we could go into in this report. It is worth a read if you think that this is an interesting and momentous time. And I think with the news cycle being what it is, a lot of this will have blown away, and or at least the volume will go down. Of course, Johnson and the Tories will light upon it and gleefully resurrect it at every opportunity. The gutter press are out in force. So I say we're talking about 23 cases of political interference. Not all of them nefarious, not necessarily done with ill will or bad faith. 23 cases of that, and 2 cases of harassment by officers of the party for which the party are deemed to be culpable by law. This is not a massive overarching institutional racism in the Labour Party, and in fact the report nowhere concludes that the party is institutionally racist, and neither does it conclude anything whatsoever about Jeremy Corbyn, who is not mentioned by name in the report, though of course the lotto, the office of the leader of the opposition, is invoked on numerous occasions. So I think there's a hyping up of what the import of this report is by the gutter press. The Daily Mail talks about a cesspit of racism, and who are they to talk? Okay, it was a long time ago, but this is the party that thought Hitler was a great bloke, and it's a scurrilous rag, in my honest opinion, dog whistling some of the worst impulses of people. So I don't want to make light of it. On the other hand, I want to kind of sense of proportion and balance about what has gone on here. Now, shortly after the report came out, Jeremy Corbyn made a statement to the effect that he thought there was an exaggeration of the extent of anti-Semitism in the Labour Party. And people have jumped on this as saying that he's somehow repudiating the report, despite the fact that Corbyn said the report should be implemented in full. Very clearly, on a few occasions since yesterday. What Jeremy Corbyn was referring to, and he makes this clear in the public domain, is that due to incessant press claims that the Labour Party is somehow absolutely a cesspit of anti-Semitism, certainly if you listen to Radio 4 on the run-up to the 2019 election, you would see this written large, you would hear this written large. Corbyn's claiming that this press treatment is greatly exaggerated to the extent that a survey of public opinion concluded that the majority opinion of the British people was that one third of the Labour Party were active anti-Semites. The truth being, if we're looking at these figures, that the figure would be more like 0.3%. Probably inevitable in a mass party of 500,000 members. Again, we don't want to downplay it. As Corbyn says, one case is too many. But an exaggeration did take place to the extent that the public were convinced by the gutter press, and the gutter press exists to convince the public of all kinds of shit, that anti-Semitism in the Labour Party is 100 times more prevalent than, in fact, it is. And this is what Corbyn was referred to, but this has been twisted by people all over the place. People who want to further undermine the possibility that the Corbyn project will resurrect itself or become operative in any way, shape or form. There is tremendous fear of the enthusiasm that Corbyn's project and the 2017 and 2019 manifestos aroused, particularly in young people. And it is a threat to the establishment, a mild one, but nevertheless a threat to the capitalist establishment. Here's a good example. I just watched Sky News on YouTube, in which Aaron Bastani is being interviewed, and at the same time as one Rachel Cunliffe, a journalist, is being interviewed. And we hear Rachel Cunliffe absolutely just misrepresenting the report. Instead of two cases of harassment being found, which resulted in both of the respondents either leaving or being expelled from the Labour Party, which led to both of the respondents no longer being members of the Labour Party. She turns this into an overarching systemic racism throughout the party. She claims that Corbyn is rejecting the report, which he doesn't. He does say some of the findings he might want to quibble with, and I think that would be very easy to do. If you read it with a fine eye and a bit of epistemology under your belt, you find that it's lacking in some respects. He's entitled to say that. That is a matter of his free expression. It's not true that he was claiming that the report was exaggerated. The report is on the level of the number of cases and the extent of the anti-Semitism. It's fairly circumspect, though it does get carried away in places with impressionistic notions of what the Labour Party is really like. But for this person, it's undemonstrable. And it is demonstrably true that public opinion, through the exaggerations of the political opponents of the Corbyn project, was swayed to the extent that the true extent of anti-Semitism in the Labour Party was generally exaggerated by 100 times. this Rigel Cunliffe, has, well, I don't have anything of it. And she obviously hadn't really read the report except maybe skim ready, and was not on top of the brief. Nevertheless, this person gets a place on Sky News, coming out with these just plain, simple falsehoods. And thankfully, Dr. Bastani did call her out on it and said, this is just not true. This is just not factually true. This is all over the place. This lack of circumspection, this complete distortion of both the report and the position of Jeremy Corbyn. And it seems to me a terrible thing that Jeremy Corbyn was suspended from the party for stating the truth. However, one presumes there will be an investigation and we'll see what is found. But there we have it. As Noam Chomsky says, this is an absolute triumph of propaganda, that one of the most principled politicians in the modern age, one of the most consistent and active anti-racists and defender of Jewish communities, is somehow committed to the political wilderness for stating the truth. And I think this is a bad reflection on the Starmer Labour Party and on Keir Starmer. Now, it seems as though there was probably some kind of irregularity in the matter of Corbyn's suspension. I don't really know. The rumour on social media, and it is a rumour, is that Corbyn was expelled by the secretary of the party, and if they're going to follow the recommendations of the EHRC, it shouldn't have been done that way. Starmer himself does claim that he's kept a distance from it, as is required by the EHRC report, as is rightly required by the EHRC report. But, of course, everybody is saying, well, Starmer's dumped Corbyn. Starmer's pushed him out. Rebecca Lung-Bailey was demoted from the front bench to the back benches for a defensible remark, in my opinion, or just basically for retweeting a perhaps not-so-cautious remark made by the actress Maxine Peake, who later retracted. My own personal opinion is that she shouldn't have retracted. But there we go. This is another matter. But it does have a smell about it that the left is being purged from the party. Anyway, we'll see how things unfold. We should note, again, nowhere is Jeremy Corbyn personally named as an anti-Semite in the report, in the EHRC report. Nowhere is there an accusation of systemic racism in the Labour Party. There are accusations of poor procedures, which I think will now be put right in such a way that they will become a strength of the Labour Party and actually will bounce back on the other parties, because we're going to see some fairly strident calls for them to abide by the same standards that the EHRC is demanding of the Labour Party, and we'll see how they fare. But this will happen, I'm sure of it. Mind you, given how much the Tory party is getting away with vis-a-vis corruption, chumocracy, you know, one wonders they seem to be able to get away with anything at the moment. So I'm going to leave it there for now. Thank you for listening. This is a little bit longer than I intended. And as I say, there's such a lot of detail in there, we could go on forever. I might take on looking closely at some of the suspicious absences of the notion of the actual truth or falsehood of utterances in the way in which supposedly anti-Semitic statements are appraised. And I think we could have some fun with that, but I'm not sure when that will happen. Anyway, thanks for listening. Thanks to patrons for their contributions, which help us to keep this thing going. And wash your hands. Be careful out there. Lots of love. And happy apocalypse. Make knowledge great again.